ASI President Larry Robinson is taking a step to further his political career. Robinson will be one of the contenders in the March election for San Luis Obispo City Council. The Cal Poly student says he's running because the students haven't had a voice in city politics and because he feels there's a lack of assertiveness in the current council.
I'm afraid the city council, is, in my eyes, has not really made any real decisions in the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, they have not passed the housing element, even though it's been proposed for the last 5 years. They have not done anything about the rent problem for mobile home residents. They've not done anything about the rents in this city for renters. They've not made any real decisions except an occasional easement and an occasional abatement. I mean, they run the city at the status quo very well, but when it comes to innovation, they're really lacking.
Robinson is particularly concerned with the council's indecision on whether San Luis Obispo should grow. He favors growth, but says the decision should be up to the voters.
We get down to a matter of growth, and the city council has been hemming and hawing, like I said, for about 5 years as to whether this city is going to grow or not grow. What I'd like to see done is what Keith Gurney tried to do, and that was to put up to a vote of the city. You know, where exactly do you want to grow if you want to grow? Do you want this city to expand at all? You know, I was talking to Walt Lambert earlier today, and he gave me, I think, a really good example. You know, San Luis Obispo is like a plant. If you water it a little bit, it's going to grow a little bit. But if you don't water it at all, then it's going to die.
Robinson says his campaign will not interfere with his presidential responsibilities, but rather his official duties will probably prevent him from conducting the type of race he'd like. His campaign is being almost totally student-run, and although he feels he'd be a fair representative to the whole community, he is depending heavily on student support.
If the students vote, and if the students vote for students, I may have a really good chance. But it all depends on, number one, how apathetic the students are, and number two, how much they really want to have input in the city government.
For 91 News, this is Leslie Bensacca reporting.
£10 bacon, £5 butter, £8 flour, £25 clams. You may think you just heard part of the shopping list for the Jolly Green Giant, but in fact, it was Chef Lane Page of Cal Poly's Food Foundation's secret recipe for creamy clam chowder, which happens to feed 450 students. The food service on Cal Poly's campus is no small potato. The foundation is the largest of its kind in the California college system, serving approximately 12 to 15,000 customers a day. If you find clam chowder isn't your favorite, you do have a voice in the matter. According to Mr. Everett Duro, Cal Poly's food service director, the students play a major part in the smooth operation of the school's food service facilities. Not only do Poly students make up 90% of the employees, they also have their own Student Board of Ideas and Gripes, officially named BIG. BIG enables any student to submit menu selections and criticisms to the foundation. Meal planning for the main cafeteria is a well-organized process. Weekly listings of the scheduled meals are set on a 6-week cycle and put together at least one full quarter in advance. With those meals, the students at Cal Poly have a unique privilege that they may not be aware of. It's called homegrown. Any produce or dairy products produced by the School of Agriculture are bought by the Food Foundation at a comparable wholesale price and used in food preparation whenever possible. In fact, the University Union ice cream parlor is supplied through Poly's own dairy. Unfortunately, not only is Poly's food hot, but so, it seems, is their silverware. Duro estimates the replacement of broken or stolen tableware from the dining area adds up to approximately $10,000 a year. That $10,000 comes out of a tremendous $1,648 million budget, which covers Poly's entire food service operation. Also covered in that $1 million allotment is the food cost. Last year, Poly spent $448,000 on meat, $412,000 on dairy products, and $110,000 on produce alone. That may be just a bit more food than the Jolly Green Giant bargained for, but if nothing else, it's a lot of food for thought. This is Rebecca Feelig reporting for 91 News.
Even with San Luis Obispo's ever-increasing population, the quality of air has remained the same over the past 5 years. There are two chief sources of smog in San Luis Obispo County, automobiles and Morro Bay's power plant, both of which emit oxides of nitrogen that combine in the atmosphere with hydrocarbons derived from automobile exhausts and petroleum products such as gasoline, which are stored and marketed in San Luis Obispo County. The smog levels are divided into three stage alerts, the third being the worst. The first stage alert indicates that the smog level is at about 0.20 parts per million. This county's highest ever recorded level was a 0.16 reading. On the average, the smog level reads at 0.02, and the level never exceeded the health limits once in 1978. Assistant Air Pollution Control Officer Bob Carr attributes this to the ability of smog control technology being able to keep up with the population. However, Mr. Carr goes on to say that he believes sometime within the next 15 years, the population will outman that technology and the smog level will eventually increase. For 91 News, I'm Cliff Flyam reporting.
Tay-Sachs is a genetic disease that destroys the nervous system. The child appears normal for a time, but soon the child will lose all his physical skills, his sight, the ability to eat and to smile, and eventually lose his life. Anyone may be a carrier of Tay-Sachs, and in the general population, the carrier rate is approximately 1 in 200. The Jewish population has a very high rate, about 1 in 27. When both parents carry the gene, there is a 1 in 4 chance that pregnancy will result in a child doomed with Tay-Sachs. Chris Klefstead, student coordinator for Tay-Sachs, will explain more about the testing.
Testing for Tay-Sachs is important to all of us. Out of 624 persons tested on campus in 1977, 8 carriers of Tay-Sachs were identified. Out of these 8 carriers, 5 were of Jewish ancestry and 3 were non-Jews. This shows the importance of everyone being tested. Screening for carriers will be held today in Chumash Auditorium from 9 until 3 this afternoon. The testing is being offered in conjunction with the Tay-Sachs Disease Prevention Program, an organization funded by the state. Screening itself consists of a small blood sample taken from the arm and is absolutely free of charge. Everyone is encouraged to attend.
The objectives of the California Tay-Sachs Disease Prevention Program are to identify and counsel all carriers of the Tay-Sachs gene. This will prevent further occurrences of this tragic disease in our population and will allow carriers of the gene to have only unaffected children. This is Donna Burke reporting for 91 News. In April 1977, the Human Needs Assessment Committee of San Luis Obispo was formed to look at the unmet human needs of the city. Since the completion of the assessment, the committee hopes to bring about new programs for the city of San Luis Obispo by fall 1979. 4 subcommittees will be formed: a committee dealing with coordinating ways of free or low-cost legal advice, a committee of information and referral programs in the city, a committee for adoption of housing elements in the city, and a committee to understand the nursing home problems and visiting the patients in nursing homes in San Luis Obispo. The city spent approximately $10,000 of its own funds to conduct the needs assessment. Other resources, including the use of city personnel, were also used. This is the first attempt of a comprehensive human needs assessment in the history of San Luis Obispo County and among the first in the state of California. For further information about the assessment, the committee, or the programs, contact Pat Wickstrom, Human Needs Assistant at the Human Relations Commission on Palm Street in San Luis Obispo. This is Donna Burke reporting for 91 News.
You hand in your last final and walk out of the room with mixed feelings of relief and accomplishment. About 3 weeks later, you receive the stark results of your efforts, grades. You may or may not have ever wondered what takes place during those 3 weeks or so in which the grades of about 16,000 students are processed. It goes something like this. About 72 hours after the last day of finals, instructors turn grades into the records office on an obscan grade list. The lists are checked over, then sent to the computer center here on campus. They're read by a machine which puts the grade information on a tape that serves as the input for the computer, and out come report cards. An adhesive label is also made to put on students' permanent records. All this is a staff-run regular administrative activity, the cost of which is absorbed by the computer center, which is in turn reimbursed by the chancellor's office. What's the margin for error in the processing of about 70,000 individual grades? About 300 mistakes due to such things as students with the same names using incorrect ID numbers or incorrect data that occasionally finds its way into the machinery. So if you pick up your grades one of these quarters and find that your GPA has shot up from a 2.5 to a 5.2, you might blame it on the computer age we live in. Then again, you might not mention it at all. I'm Mike Medoff reporting for 91 News.
The Presidential Selection Advisory Committee is now in the process of selecting a replacement for retired Cal Poly President Robert E. Kennedy. The students at Cal Poly are being represented on the committee by Steve Bennett, a senior ag business major. Even though Bennett is the only student on the committee, he says he can still confidently represent the whole student body.
It would have been nice to have, you know, a majority of students on this committee, since the students are going to be directly affected by our next president. But I think it's also very impressive to set up a procedure such as the Student Senate did and go through evaluations and interviews where they can come up with a candidate that is a united student voice. And I think that's very impressive, instead of having, say, for example, we have three faculty members, and although they have maybe three times as much input as the students, it's always the same input and they're always agreeing, you know, on what they're going to say. So one voice, I think, is just as effective as the three.
So far, the committee has prepared material to advertise the position, but after the application deadline, February 15th, the 13 committee members will begin reviewing all applications and interviewing 12 to 15 of the candidates before making their recommendation to the Board of Trustees. According to Bennett, the committee is looking for another president who will continue, as Kennedy has done, the learn-by-doing techniques at Cal Poly.
We have President Kennedy's attitudes, I think, in mind on our committee. He has kept the basic learn-by-doing philosophy that has come up through the years at Cal Poly from McPhee and now the Kennedy era, where he's really strengthened agriculture and engineering and architecture programs. And he's kept his eye on the other programs also to make sure that they are strong and support, you know, the rest of these technical fields. And I think the members of the committee want that same basic philosophy, so that his views are in the back of our minds.
The student representative says that other qualities he is looking for in a president include someone with a technical background who has also dealt with administrative procedures and who has had a successful teaching experience. The Board of Trustees has set May 21st as their target date for selecting a new university president. This is Leslie Bensacca reporting for 91 News.
By day, he cleans bathrooms in college dormitories. At night, he's the lead guitarist for the local rock group Blazing Heart. Jeff Malman has been a Cal Poly custodian for 5 years. He's been a musician for much longer.
When I was about 2 years old, I had a plastic banjo that I loved, and I used to see just other people around playing the guitar, and I always just went, wow, I'd really like to do that. And then I was in fourth grade, there was this little girl I liked that could play the guitar, and I couldn't, and that really blew me away, and it stuck in my mind more and more. And I just saw people doing this and that, and then my father bought me one day. I was about 13 or so. And I just, you know, progressed. That was about the time of the Beatles and stuff.
Like many successful musicians before him, Malman says he has had no formal musical training.
I took one guitar lesson and learned Mary Had a Little Lamb for $3.50 and immediately realized that that was the fool's route to go. So I just kind of just listened to other musicians.
Malman played with various bands throughout junior high school and later with an Atascadero band known as Revenge before forming Blazing Heart with two other Cal Poly musicians. The 28-year-old musician describes his band for
us. We do basically hardcore rock and roll, thunderous kind of music, Zeppelin style, along to vintage 60s stuff that made music what it is today.
The newly formed trio practices in Malman's Cayucas home and is hoping to build a strong reputation locally before trying for the big time.
Those things I think you kind of have to make happen. So we'll kind of see how this band goes, and wherever the Lord wants us to go, we think that we'll go there.
But Malman is keeping his fingers crossed.
Nobody knows the future. You never know what's going to happen. We could just do this one weekend thing and be gone forever. We could go to stardom. You never can tell.
The custodian guitarist, who also writes some of the group's music, explains what one of his personal goals is.
Probably just getting to the point where I'm satisfied with what I'm doing and getting a grip on things. You know, feeling in control, where I'm comfortable, I'm having a good time, and it's not a lot of work when I go to perform.
For now, Malman will continue cleaning bathrooms, and the rest of the band will stay students and trust the Lord to pave their way.
God is going to guide us, and if He wants us to do anything, it'll happen. There's a big plan for everything, and if the Lord wants us to be in L.A. doing it, we'll be in L.A. doing it. If the Lord wants us just to stay in Cayucas and play for the people at Cal Poly, we'll do that, and we'll accept it and be happy.
This is Tom Hiscox reporting for 91 News.
Of all the clubs there are on campus, there is one which has a habit of bringing big-name performers and great-sounding bands to Cal Poly, and it's not the ESI Concerts Committee. That group is the Nazarene Student Mission Corps. I interviewed Greg Sills, the Corps' president, Mike Robinson, the vice president, and the group's consultant, Reverend Paul Huddle, to find out what the Nazarene Student Mission Corps was all about.
We're basically the group from the Church of the Nazarene here in town, which is recognized on campus as a Cal Poly organization. And we sort of serve to represent the church on campus. And we've done that in the past traditionally by putting on a lot of Christian-oriented concerts.
The performers that the Nazarene Student Mission Corps has scheduled to appear at Cal Poly this spring are B.J. Thomas, Bob Ayala, Ernie and Debbie Rutino, and Sweet Comfort. When I asked how the club, which is affiliated with about 250 Cal Poly students, could bring such big-name performers as B.J. Thomas to Cal Poly, Reverend Huddle responded,
"It's perseverance and faith."
Is it easy to bring big names to Cal Poly? Reverend Huddle said no, explaining that there were many obstacles. In the case of B.J. Thomas, Huddle said, you have to find out when he'll be on the West Coast, because you just don't fly his entire entourage of 15 musicians to California from anywhere in the country. It costs too much. Once you know when they'll be on the coast, Huddle explained, you have to match that date with the date that's open on your local calendar. I asked if there was any way of knowing whether there would be enough student participation for the Nazarene Student Mission Corps to break even. He said, no, it's total faith.
We are out on a limb, and we basically have individuals who will financially back it. But there are formulas that we go on, a percentage of the seating capacity, plus certain interest points, that we have to work out a formula so we know how many tickets we need to sell at what price to break even.
Reverend Huddle explained that because the Corps was a university organization, they did not have to pay the performer ahead of time. He said that the Corps makes little, if any, profits, but has to pay the ESI 10% of whatever profit they make because they use university facilities. The concerts coming up will be Ernie and Debbie Rutino, February 25th, for an evening service at the Nazarene Church, Ron Salisbury, formerly of the JC Power Outlet, who will be here with Fred Field, formerly of Love Song, on March 10th, Bob Ayala, who performed last year with the Children of the Day, will be at the Nazarene Church March 23rd. B.J. Thomas is double-billed with Sweet Comfort for April 5th. I'm Ray Matthew reporting for 91 News.
Members of the Cal Poly Solar Energy Club have begun construction of a solar energy educational display. The project will be built by students in front of the San Luis Obispo Public Library. The club is still looking for volunteers to help with the construction of the case as well as the photo cells. Bob Levi, president of the club, described what the project will entail.
The solar energy display consists actually of three facets. One facet is a photo cell powered clock that's going to be facing the street so that people can read it from while walking or whether in their cars. Now, in order to read it at night, another facet is going to be a light that is going to light up for a few hours at night, probably when the library is open, from like 5 till 9, when it's dark enough so that we need a light. And that's going to be also powered by photovoltaics. Now, the whole object of this is that there's going to be no external power to the unit at all. It's just going to be its own separate thing.
Funds are being provided by the Equal Opportunity Commission, who has donated $1,000 for the display, providing it has educational value.
On another side of this display is going to be the educational display part, which is going to consist of some shelves that we can put some projects on, little projects about solar energy, or handouts, or little pamphlets, or just something to educate the public, because according to the EOC, it's got to be an educational display. So we have to incorporate that as part of our design.
Levi says that if all goes according to schedule, the club hopes to have the project completed by the end of April in time for Poly Royal. This is Leslie Bensacca reporting for 91 News.
Scott Hallquist is taking Cal Poly's motto, Learn by Doing, at its word. Scott, an ornamental horticulture major who plans to earn a master's in business administration, recently purchased PJ's, a local disco.
I was looking to build one in San Luis Obispo, and a place where students can go and have a good time that has a little class. And PJ's went up on the market, and so I decided I'd do it there.
Scott is not a novice in the business world. In the past, he has operated a small-scale landscaping business and has also been dealing in real estate in San Luis Obispo. PJ's is Scott's latest project. The disco attracts about 1,000 customers in the 3 days a week it is open. Scott explained not many people from Cal Poly attend because of a misconception that PJ's is overrun with high school students. Since he bought PJ's in December, Scott has spent every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night learning about his investment, which won't be out of escrow until March. One of Scott's goals for PJ's is to provide a night spot for people under 21. Although many aspects of PJ's will remain the same, such as the age limit of 18, the absence of alcohol, and the price of admission, Scott has planned some changes. In early March, a renovated PJ's will open under the new name Station 51.
It's going to have an antique firehouse type of theme. There'll be a lot of lights, a lot of activity, there's always a lot of noise, and just make it a really exciting place to go. So you don't have to go there just to dance, there'll be other things to do.
Plans are also underway to open the disco on Wednesday nights as something similar to the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, which features young comics. The approval of the County Planning Commission is necessary for a move like this, but Scott is already beginning negotiations for a possible appearance by Robin Williams of Mork and Mindy fame. Despite Scott's business know-how, there is always the possibility that he is bought into a fad that is on its way out, but Scott doesn't see it that way.
I don't really think it's a fad. Fads usually don't last too long at all. Disco's been around in the East Coast for about 15 years now, and it's just started to come to California in the last year. And at first, a lot of larger clubs in LA and San Francisco area were pretty leery of it, and now they're starting to go disco. I'm not going to be totally confined to it as far as if disco music starts to fade out, then we'll play whatever people want to dance to. People are always going to want to dance to something, but I think disco's going to be around for a long time.
With his business experience and creativity, Scott Hallquist should be around for a long time, too. This is Bev Sassenberry reporting for 91 News.
A substantial number of today's elementary school-age children have emotional and behavioral problems that are frequently the result of circumstances in the child's home. This was the expressed opinion of Abby Clark, counselor for children of kindergarten through sixth grade level in the Santa Maria School District. Mrs. Clark, who has held the position of child counselor for 3 years, works out of two schools in Santa Maria. Through teacher and parental referrals, children with emotional conflicts, behavioral problems, and children suffering from child abuse come to Clark on a one-to-one basis for counseling. Frequently, she visits the homes of the children needing special attention, thereby contacting the parents face-to-face. I asked Mrs. Clark to give a brief description of a current case she is working on.
At the present time, I am working with a case that was referred to me by a teacher. It was on a little girl that had severe behavior problems. As it turned out, when I started to work with the child, it turned out that there was quite a bit of family violence in the home where the child and the mother and the brothers were being beaten by the father. So at this time, I had referred the case on to family violence.
Violence in the family is one of several local agencies Clark may closely coordinate her work dealing in child counseling. Other service agencies she coordinates with include Social Advocates for Youth, Mental Health, and Social Services, which is concerned with child abuse cases. Mrs. Clark, who received a master's degree in counseling and guidance from Cal Poly and a pupil personnel credential from the state of California, believes her job as child counselor is extremely rewarding.
Being a counselor to me has been the most satisfying positions I've ever had within the educational system because of the fact when you get a child that has so many behavior problems or so many emotional problems and to see them progress and at the end come out with they can produce in school and they are happy around their peers has got to be the biggest reward I think any person can have in the field of education.
The job of counseling children will yield well-rounded people of the future. This is Bruce Clark reporting for 91 News.
For a sport that has been played only 10 years, it is surprising to note that racquetball is the fastest growing participant sport in America. Invented by a tennis pro who sawed the handle off of his tennis racket, racquetball has come a long way since then. It wasn't until 1969 that the name racquetball and the first national tournament came about. Approximately 50,000 people participated in the sport then, and it is now estimated that over 5 million play in public and private facilities across the country. The relative simplicity of the game and the intense workout are just two reasons why the game has grown so fast. Manager Sheldon Feike of the new San Luis facility, the Courthouse, had this to say about the game's success.
It's fast gaining popularity. I think that it's a combination of the intense workout that you can get in a short amount of time, and I think that people's schedules or their lifestyles is hectic and quick, and in order to maintain a certain level of exercise and recreation at the same time, racquetball is a great combination. And it takes away a little bit from the tennis where it's not so seasonal because it's indoors, you can play it year-round.
Presently, racquetball is as socially acceptable as tennis and has as many women participants as men. I talked with some of the enthusiasts on campus and got their views on the sport.
Why do you like to play racquetball?
Well, because it's a fun sport, and for an hour's worth of exercise, you know, you don't need to jog. It's fun. It's a game sport. Play with other people.
What about you? Well, I like because it's fast and gives you a lot of movement. And compared to handball, it's a little easier, so it's not as hard in your hands. All right.
More fun to play than tennis.
Yeah. Well, I'm just a hacker at this. My game's tennis, but it's just an aggressive game. Why do you like to play racquetball?
I love it because it's fun. The ball always comes off the wall, and it's a game. It's not like there's heavy competition involved. You can't really blow it at all.
How do you like to play racquetball?
It's probably faster and easier than tennis or handball.
Play racquetball.
Wait, I don't know.
Why do you like to play racquetball?
Because it's really fast, and you move around a lot.
What about you?
Because it's fun.
And for those dedicated enthusiasts, start saving now. The cost of your own private court is just around $20,000. This is Wayne Jackson reporting for 91 News.
Brave students will be testing their gluing and floating ability at Laguna Lake during the third annual milk carton boat race this Saturday. More than 25 boats are expected to compete for trophies given by the Los Lucheros Dairy Club. The boats can be entered in three classes, people power, mechanical power, and sail power. Trophies will be awarded for first place in each class, as well as for the most imaginative boat and the boat with the most milk cartons. Each boat entry received 80 milk cartons from the Los Lucheros Dairy Club. Leanne Burning, chairperson of the race, said between 2,000 and 2,500 empty milk cartons were donated by creameries from all over the state. Students have been planning and working on their boats since the beginning of February.
Dairy Club advisor Tim LaSalle said one club showed him blueprints for their boat. I got a description of that boat from Tim Blockinger, a member of the Cal Poly Sail Club.
The boat that we've designed is approximately 20 feet long and about 5 feet wide. It's a catamaran, which means it has two hulls. Total support will be supplied by 212 milk cartons. We figure it'll hold up about 800 to 850 pounds. This boat's going to be about 20 feet long overall. There's going to be a bowsprit on the front. And there will be 140 square feet of sail on two different masts.
I asked Tim what they used to hold the milk cartons together.
We use contact cement. I had an uncle work at Lockheed, the chemist there, and he went and tested a whole bunch of different contact cements for us, and he came up with this grip contact cement, which just did an absolutely superb job.
Tim Bench, a mechanical engineering student, designed a unique entry for the People Power Division.
I call it the water walkers, essentially large water skis, and they're going to be approximately 20 milk cartons under each ski. And the principle is someone is going to be in sort of like water ski bindings, and they are going to walk on the water. There are going to be small hinged paddles on the bottom side of each ski that will allow you to slide the ski forward, but when you press backwards, the paddle will drop, and that's how you get your power. We'll probably have a couple of small keels so you don't do the splits in the water. We haven't worked that out yet. But it's sort of just like walking on big shoes or something over the lake.
You'd have to move your legs back and forth.
Yeah, it would be similar to cross-country skiing, long strides.
Last year, over 350 people watched the boat race. The milk carton boats not only help publicize milk, but the race involves campus clubs and the community. This is Missy Arnold reporting for 91 News.
Many people believe you practically need a boat to do anything at Lopez Lake. Now with the Mustang Water Slide, this is not the case. The Mustang Water Slide is actually two 600-foot water slides located just off the main road at Lopez Lake. This is the first one of its kind in the county and was designed by a former Cal Poly graduate. Warren Dolezal, who graduated in 1957 with a degree in engineering, is owner and engineer of the water slide. Dolezal told us he got the idea while visiting back east when he saw a smaller slide and decided to expand on it to a larger recreational facility. The whole project took approximately 2 years to complete, from the idea to the finished construction. We asked Dolezal if there were any other facilities at the water slide.
Part of the slide, when you go on the slide, your admission includes you can either slide or you can participate in the four jacuzzi hot spas that we have. These are 8-foot diameter spas. They hold about 10 people each. And that's part of your admission during the time that you're in the slide.
Dolezal said there was really no certain age group that spent most of their time at the slide, but rather young and old alike enjoyed it. The water slide is closed during the winter months and reopens again around Easter. So now when you're thinking of going to Lopez Lake, instead of looking for the nearest boat, all you would need to take will be your bathing suit. This is Mike Houston, reporting for 91 News.
No Hassle Travel is the idea behind the University Travel Center located downstairs in the Cal Poly University Union. I spoke to the founder of the center, Mr. Rod Newbert, about the services provided there.
We have information on travel throughout the United States and throughout the world, and we book charter flights for students. We also take care of such things as rail passes, international student identity cards, also have information on things such as working abroad and various tours.
Newbert went on to explain that he knows most students don't have much money when it comes to traveling and definitely keeps that in mind when giving advice.
There are some discounts that are strictly for students, but most of the things we have in the travel center aren't discounts for students per se, but they're the least expensive charter flights or least expensive packages that are available. We spend all our time looking for the best deals. Our files are not filled through full of all kinds of deals, but just the best of deals. We have rather limited space, so we've devoted all our space to the lowest cost.
Actually, he said, the various agencies are paid nothing by their customers, and 9 times out of 10, the customer will save money through the discounts and deals the agent may be aware of. Of course, the key point in making successful travel arrangements is in planning ahead. So, if in the future you're told to go fly a kite, before you do, check with Rod Newbert in the Travel Center. He may find you a cheaper way to go. This is Rebecca Felig reporting for 91 News.
For the past 2 years that I've been here at Cal Poly, I've often wondered about the concert committee and ways to join, plus some other interesting things that I've always been curious about, and perhaps you as well. So to break up this state of curiosity, I found it worthwhile to interview the chairman and co-chairman of the concert committee, Liz Nevins and Dana Jones. One of my first questions I asked Liz and Dana was about membership. What does it take to join the committee?
To get onto the committee, you have to attend 3 meetings, and after those 3 meetings, you will become an associate member or have associate status. You must pay your worker first show a $6 membership fee charge, and as vacancies come up in the regular 30 members of the committee, you will be voted on by the executive board in our meetings, which meet Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. in the APC to 17D.
I then asked the chairman something I know U.S. students would like to know.
We had mantras.
For the past 2 years that I've been here at Cal Poly, I've often wondered about the concert committee and ways to join, plus some other interesting things that I've always been curious about, and perhaps you as well. So to break up this state of curiosity, I found it worthwhile to interview the chairman and co-chairman of the concert committee, Liz Nevins and Dana Jones. One of my first questions I asked Liz and Dana was about membership. What does it take to join the committee?
To get onto the committee, you have to attend 3 meetings, and after those 3 meetings, you will become an associate member or have associate status. You must pay your worker first show a $6 membership fee charge, and as vacancies come up in the regular 30 members of the committee, you will be voted on by the executive board in our meetings, which meet Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. in the APC to 17D.
I then asked the chairman something I know U.S. students would like to know. I asked her, why is there an age limit of 18 years old here at Cal Poly to get into a concert?
We had mantras with Earthquake, and at that time the committee was set up so under 18 could attend with parent or guardian, and at that concert there was an abuse of that restriction. We had a lot of junior high students from Santa Maria and from San Luis that attended the concert. Windows were broken. Cars were stolen. A girl was pushed through a glass door. There was excessive drinking, smoking, etc. It was just a very wild concert as far as people in the administration felt.
After talking to Liz and Dana for a while now, I had only one more curious question that was more like a rumor that I had heard, and that rumor being that a big-name rock group was coming to play at Cal Poly, that group being The Cars. If you heard that same rumor, here is your answer.
To verify any of these rumors, as soon as we are definitely going to be doing a group, and as soon as the contract is signed, we notify both KCPR and the Mustang Daily, and they are your best sources. They will know the people to talk to in the administration to
to verify things like that.
So as far as the cars coming to Cal Poly, definitely not. At least, not this year. Well, all my curiosity about the concert committee is over, but I know in the months to come, I'll build up some more questions that I want to ask Liz and Dana again. But when that does happen, I'm just going to have to wait and keep on wondering until next year's News Day. This has been George Baca reporting for 91 News.
The president of Tintype Graphics here in San Luis Obispo is a man with an interesting hobby by the name of Brian Lawler. Mr. Lawler is a Cal Poly graduate, and if he had a theme song, it might well be the Fifth Dimensions hit of a few years back called Up, Up and Away. Brian Lawler is about to become the new editor of Balloonist Journal magazine published here in San Luis Obispo, the official magazine of the National Organization of Balloonists, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C. And he is eminently qualified for the job because he is one of only three balloonists here in the county. Perhaps not surprisingly, balloonists are relatively independent-minded people who can be found just about anywhere. However, the greatest single concentration is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where they are 100 strong. There are two kinds of balloons, certified commercially manufactured and experimental home-built. The type of balloon you fly has an effect on such things as insurance rates and what type of flying you are entitled to do. There are six major commercial manufacturers of balloons in the entire world. The cost of balloons runs about $8,000 on up. Balloonists do have organized competition. The national championships held in Iowa every August, for example. 100 people turn out to compete, and then another 100 take off just for fun. Balloonist competition is judged mainly for accuracy, since you really cannot steer a balloon and are more or less at the mercy of the wind. One kind of competitive event is to try to pick a set of car keys up off a pole 6 inches in diameter while in flight. If you get the keys, you win the brand new car that goes with them. Nobody has won now for 3 years running, but some have come within about 50 feet. There are those who take the sport of ballooning very seriously indeed. That ballooning will someday displace baseball as the great American pastime is a little doubtful, but that's an academic point because, as Brian Lawler says, balloon flying is a very whimsical thing. This is Mike Medoff reporting for 91 News.
Housing in the San Luis Obispo area is growing harder and harder to find, especially if you're a married student. Cal Poly has been planning since 1971 to take care of that problem, but so far a promised married student housing complex has failed to materialize. Plans for such a complex to be built on the corner of Slack and Grand Streets were submitted to the university last March by Centran Corporation of Denver, Colorado. At that time, the Mustang Daily announced that the concept had been approved by the campus planning committee, but final plans had yet to be submitted by the corporation involved. When the plans were submitted last summer, various flaws were found in them by campus housing and planning officials. The plans were tentatively rejected and sent back to the architect for revision. Until the plans are resubmitted, university officials will take no further action on the matter. No funds for new housing are in the university's 1979 or 80 budgets, and with an overall CSUC budget cut of more than $45 million by Governor Brown, it doesn't look like the funds will be readily available. So for now, the proposed married student housing complex for up to 300 students will remain non-existent buildings on the 1975 campus master plan. I'm Tom Hiscox reporting for 91 News.
We are facing an overpopulation problem in this country that gets worse every year. Pet overpopulation has grown to the point where an average of 15 million dogs and cats are destroyed annually in humane shelters across the country. And though this figure may seem large, it does not include those animals that die in abandoned autos or open fields. The National Humane Society feels the cause of this problem relates to intensified sex drives in these pets because of years of selective breeding. Others feel the blame rests on the individual owners for not taking the responsibility of having their pets neutered. San Luis Obispo has a pet overpopulation problem that is unique in cause. Melissa McCormick at the Woods Humane Society in town explains why.
A lot of it has to do with students. You know, they'll get their little pet because they're, you know, they're away from home and they're lonely. They want a companion or whatever. They get a little pet, and they don't realize that that little puppy or kitty is going to grow up and start having babies, especially the females. Now, the males, of course, they're not going to have babies, but it takes two to tango.
At the present time, neutering is the only 100% effective solution to the pet overpopulation problem. There are birth control devices on the market for pets, and even abortions have been tried on some, but both of these methods have a low success rate and sometimes result in the death of the pet. Neutering is a simple operation that can be performed by a vet. Depending on the size of your dog, the average cost for the operation is between $20 and $60. The average cost for cats is around $40. Those owners who feel they cannot afford these prices may take their pets to the closest humane shelter, where the operation will be done at a discount. The National Humane Society and local shelters such as Woods in San Luis both feel that in order to improve the quality of life for our pets, we must first regulate the quantity. This is Wayne Jackson reporting for 91 News.
The largest class on campus this quarter is an experimental special topic, Women in Agriculture. The class originated and is taught by Kathleen Benoit, an instructor in the Ag Management Department. I talked to Kathy and asked her how the class first started.
Last year, I put together a seminar on women in agriculture and presented it in the faculty dining hall. And the turnout was so great that I talked to my department head and asked him if it would be possible to put together a course on an experimental basis, which is what I've been doing this quarter.
How many are enrolled in the class?
It seems to change, but I think it's about 156.
The 150 students enrolled have the opportunity to listen to two speakers a week from different professions. Kathy explained the class is designed to help students cope with the type of problems she faced on her first job after college.
I think that I experienced things on my first job that I was not prepared for in college. And my main thrust and the idea behind this has always been that it's a type of reality training for the young women that are preparing to go out into the world.
Could this be applicable to women in other fields besides agriculture?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we just happen to be leaning in that direction. And actually, all the women that are involved in the class are not in the field of agriculture. Some of them are just in some sort of business or other. We have an attorney coming in that it doesn't have anything to do with agriculture, for instance.
The class will probably be offered again next winter quarter. This has been Judy White for 91 News.
A lot of responsibility goes along with being Cal Poly's shepherd. In charge of 200 sheep, Billy Stevens, an animal science senior, enjoys the challenge of such a big responsibility. Some of his duties include feeding, doctoring, irrigating, helping with the breeding program, and lambing. Lambing takes up the most time, but it is his favorite part, Billy said. During lambing season, which lasts from December through April, he gets up twice a night, at 1:30 and again at 4, to check on the ewes and assist if necessary. So far this year, he has lambed out about 80 ewes. As a fringe benefit, he receives free room at the sheep unit, plus salary. He lives in a 10 by 15 foot room with the shower and bathroom down the barn, one hot plate, and a coffee pot. Without a kitchen, where does he eat? I go to Arc 2 for breakfast and then wait for people to ask me over for dinner, Billy said. The job requires him to stay during vacations, weekends, and even during quarter breaks. I asked Billy, is the pay really that super?
The pay isn't that bad. It's a lot of responsibility, but I really enjoy working with the sheep and just being out here outside away from campus and really just working by myself. And it's real rewarding to do something that you like and be fairly good at it, and I think I am.
Billy puts in a lot of hours, working about 5 hours a day. He shows some of the registered stock at different sales throughout the state. He simply likes sheep and what he's doing. This is Missy Arnold reporting for 91 News.
Student Community Services evolves around 6 volunteer programs encouraging students to become involved with children, mentally handicapped, and senior citizens. Secretary of SCS, Harriet Clendenin, says although the organization cannot offer money or class credits, they appeal to students via altruism or career-related experience.
The way that we appeal to volunteers is first through their satisfaction in doing something for other people. We like to think that college students have unselfish motives. We also interest volunteers who are looking for ways to further their career opportunities.
Included in the volunteer program are befriending senior citizens and the mentally handicapped, participating in social and interpersonal activities at Atascadero State Hospital, tutoring children and teenagers, and becoming a big brother or sister. Short-term, one-time volunteer projects are also available. This is Kim Nelson reporting for 91 News.
Cal Poly has many extracurricular activities to offer, but there aren't many of them which can improve one's communicative and argumentative skills. Whether you are a pre-law major and you want training in debate and argumentation, or if you're just an interested student, the Cal Poly debate team could be the best extracurricular activity you ever got into at Cal Poly. I asked Mr. Rodney Reynolds, Cal Poly speech teacher and coach of the debate team, what Cal Poly debate was all about.
Increasing students' communicative and argumentative ability such that they're more effective in day-to-day activities and especially in the professional world. If you look around and you ask any profession what they look for in prospective employees, they'll tell you two of the most important aspects are communicative skills and writing skills. And so one of the things that we concentrate, of course, is the communicative skills.
I asked Reynolds if the competition among schools was great.
That depends upon the individual student. We go to tournaments at other colleges a great deal. And if the student cares to become competitive, they can. If they find themselves motivated by competition, that's great. However, we're not requiring that. We're simply interested in students who are interested in increasing, again, as I said, their communicative abilities.
Reynolds said that the students involved in Cal Poly debate are very enthusiastic. I asked him if he thought their enthusiasm compared to other types of student competition like basketball and football. Reynolds said there's not a lot of rooting and cheering, but yes, they get involved. Reynolds explained that all students had to do to join the debate team was to drop by the speech office or come to room 215 in the computer science building at 7 o'clock on Tuesday or Thursday nights. He explained that students could get 1 to 2 units of credit by enrolling in speech 250 or 350. I asked Reynolds how the Cal Poly debate team had done so far this year. He said, "Well, we're a building program. It'll explode next year." Cal Poly debate sounds like something a lot of students could enjoy and use. This is Ray Matthew reporting for 91 News. Have you ever wondered how the Cal Poly Drama Department can put on such great plays as Night Watch without a drama major? Where does the drama department get their actors, their costume designers, and their stage managers? The drama department depends on interested students from other majors to put on the productions. Most students know how to get involved in the acting part of a production because of all the play tryouts in the fall. But how would a student, let's say a business management major who wanted experience in managing people, become a stage manager? I asked the assistant stage manager for the play Night Watch, speech major Mike Hampton, how an interested student could become a stage manager.
Actually, it's really quite simple. You walk in and you volunteer your services, and more than likely they'll be immediately accepted. It's really quite simple to get in to the job, and it's not that difficult, and you do not require that much pre-hand experience in order to fulfill the tasks.
I asked Hampton what was involved in being an assistant stage manager.
Well, basically, as far as the task goes, as far as what you do, is you watch the script, and you make sure that they're staying true to the lines and staying true to the stage directions, and you basically are the person that knows most of what is going on stage, in terms of lines, in terms of the directions, in terms of all the technical aspects. You have the book on it.
Hampton said that technical aspects meant the physical layout of the stage, the props, the lighting, and the sound effects, as well as many other things. Hampton explained that all kinds of majors are represented by students involved in the drama department. There are art students, engineers, and students in communicative arts and humanities. It is rumored that the drama department gets more students from the School of Agriculture than from any other school. Hampton said that it is easy to get involved in the drama department, no matter what major you might be. I asked Hampton how much time was involved in being an assistant stage manager.
For myself, I put in 16 hours a week, and the stage manager puts in 20 hours a week. We practice, generally speaking, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week, as we get closer to productions and as we begin the rehearsal schedules. And during that time, we rehearse about 4 to 5 hours a night.
Play productions take about 6 weeks of preparation. It sounds like an exciting and productive use of time. This is Ray Matthew reporting for 91 News. Many students at Cal Poly are unaware of the important issues that the ASI student government deals with. Because of this ignorance, some students are led to conclude that student government is a farce. According to Cal Poly ASI President Larry Robinson, there have been very many important issues brought before the student government this year, like tuition.
I can tell you right now that I think this campus really helped stave off tuition for another year. With all the effort that Scott put in as chairman of the tuition task force, and with all the students signing petitions over the last quarter break, we made a really big impact on the governor as far as the tuition issue went, and, of course, the Board of Trustees.
Robinson also explained that the ASI had a tremendous role in bringing back summer quarter to Cal Poly. Robinson said that the ASI has done a great deal to streamline student government procedures and to increase student awareness of what the ASI is all about.
Now, no one realizes that we're a $1 million corporation, that it's spending your money. You know, it's like you're a shareholder in the corporation. You spend $20 a year on us.
I asked Robinson what the ASI's goals would be for the rest of the year.
Another goal is to strengthen the city student relationship. In the past couple of years, it's been really kind of strained, mainly because of the housing problem and the housing shortage in San Luis Obispo. So I'm trying to work to where students and non-students can get together in this community and not become warring type factions. Another problem that I see is student voice in city governance. That's my fourth goal. The problem here, of course, is that I'm a candidate now, and so this may sound self-serving, but I made this goal a long time ago before I was ever running for any kind of office. And the funny thing is that I think students are becoming more vocal in what happens in the city, and I think that we're meeting that goal as well. We're getting students informed about what is going on at the city level, so that they understand that, yes, it does affect them, and yes, they can have an impact on the decisions that the city council makes.
Robinson explained that the students elected in this year's election will have a crucial impact on the city housing issues. Robinson explained that if students turn out by the thousands and support a candidate who backs more student housing in San Luis Obispo, there is no way for the city to ignore them. The next ASI elections are coming up in May. If you want a voice about what happens to Poly students, election forms are available at the ASI offices in room 217 of the University Union. This is Ray Matthew reporting for 91 News.
Student services at Cal Poly are likely to be reduced if the Board of Trustees for the California State Universities and Colleges has its way. This report was announced by the Chancellor's Office at a conference for the chairman of various student health advisory councils throughout the state. Jeff Land, chairman of the Cal Poly Health Council, represented the school at the conference. He explained what student fees cover.
Students pay every quarter through the registration fee. That includes things such as counseling, testing, placement, disabled students, financial aid, and the health center.
The Board of Trustees plan to cut $20.6 million from the CSUC budget for the coming fiscal year.
The board plans to make part of the cut from the student service budget, although some opposition has risen, especially from the health councils.
Most people in the student services area feel that the cut should not be taken out of student services because that money comes directly from the registration fees. And once you begin to move the money from student services area into the general fund area to go to academics or any other area of the campus, it's now a tuition. It's no longer a student services fee. Once this happens, the reality of California having a free higher education system is no longer true.
The board has not announced how much they plan to cut from the entire budget, although Land says the figure of $500,000 has been mentioned as a reduction from the health service staffing budget alone. He explained how this could affect Cal Poly.
According to Dave Travis in the chancellor's office, this $500,000 cut will come in at a restaffing formula of the health services throughout the CSUC system. What this will affect, basically, is we'll have more nurse practitioners and less doctors on the whole.
Land expects to receive more definite information from the Chancellor's office next week. This is Leslie Bensacca reporting for 91 News. Members of the San Luis Obispo community will have the opportunity next month to participate in a series of workshops, seminars, and activities based on children. April 1st through the 7th has been declared Week of the Young Child in San Luis Obispo. Christy Gossin and Holly Hewitt, both senior child development majors from Cal Poly, are planning events to run throughout the week. According to Gossett, 1979 was declared the International Year of the Young Child by the United Nations General Assembly, and Week of the Young Child is one example of activities planned for the year.
This is just one specific week out of a special children's year, which is entitled the International Year of the Young Child. And this is just one week to put a special focus on children, to honor and to celebrate their possibilities and potential.
Gossin explained what the week in San Luis Obispo will entail.
During the week before the Plaza Day, which is on April 7th, we are planning different presentations for parents to attend, workshops, seminars on such things as child abuse, single parenting, mainstreaming, and developmental stages of children.
The highlight of the seven-day event will be Plaza Day, which is planned to include both adults and children.
The Plaza Day for the Week of the Young Child is on April 7th, and it's a Saturday, and it will be held in Mission Plaza. Some of the things that we have planned for the children to participate in are math activities, science projects, art activities, music, language development activities, and dramatic activities. And then some things that will also be provided for children are educational entertainment, such as puppet shows, mimes, reading of stories, and then information will also be distributed to parents and to the general public as well from the centers and from different community organizations in San Luis.
Approximately 30 groups will be giving presentations, including the Child Care Resource Center and the Child Abuse Council. More than 300 people are expected to attend. There is no charge for the week's activities, but pre-registration is required before March 1st. For more information, contact Christy Goshen at 543-6148. This is Leslie Bensacca reporting for 91 News.
Land is indeed a precious commodity and one which is rapidly becoming scarce. This is Bruce Clark reporting for KCPR 91 News. It has been quite evident to residents of the Central Coast that the cost of building a home in our perpetually developing area is steadily increasing. Several factors have contributed to this increase, including the influx of families from California's urban expanses. According to Doris Vosburgh, realtor for Red Carpet Realty in Santa Maria, the Central Coast, notably Santa Maria and San Luis Obispo, have witnessed the migration of substantial numbers of people into the area. Many of these people have settled on the Central Coast in search of a slower-paced, less crowded lifestyle than that experienced in the Los Angeles or San Francisco metropolitan areas. This increase of new residents has contributed to an increase in property value, and according to Mrs. Vosburgh, has also prompted the establishment of an ever-increasing number of business firms in the area. Other reasons for rising home costs include the generally pro-growth attitude of Central Coast communities, with the exception of anti-growth Santa Barbara, and the growing number of military and civil service personnel at Vandenberg Air Force Base. Mrs. Vosburgh pointed out that many people have moved into the area whose former place of residence were locales where winter meant bone-chilling blizzards and sub-zero temperatures. Homes in San Luis Obispo tend to be more expensive than in Santa Maria. The location of Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo is a major factor in the higher prices of homes in this Central Coast city. She added, the average monthly rent for a home in a middle-income neighborhood is approximately $450. Red Carpet Realty deals with homes, small and large acreage, and business opportunities in the community. It is now a nationwide franchise.
In the future, there will be more townhouses, condominiums, and cluster homes because of the increase in the price of land. It makes building, keeps building costs down too. Land is the one commodity that we cannot manufacture.
Mrs. Vosburgh and fellow realtor Mrs. Marilyn Harbuck noted that couples will usually commence looking for a single-family residence while in their late 20s or early 30s. Usually, both husband and wife will be employed, thereby enabling them to afford payments on their home. Many people at this age desire a house instead of an apartment for reasons of more space to raise a family, in addition to the realization that houses appreciate in value and that interest on property taxes can be deducted from their income tax. I asked Mrs. Vosburgh what the future holds in store for real estate.
The Red Carpet Group Creek in California, and then they mostly concentrated in and around California, and then they went into Arizona, and from there they spread east, and now they're all the way to the East Coast. They've had some big openings in Chicago and Philadelphia and in Florida, and they're concentrating on filling in with the middle part of the United States.
Land is indeed a precious commodity and one which is rapidly becoming scarce. This is Bruce Clark reporting for KCPR 91 News. Mother Nature has a tendency to fool everyone, especially weather forecasters. Despite today's elaborate weather recording instruments and satellite pictures, Mother Nature can change her wind direction or storm tracks and surprise us with her little bag of tricks. This was the opinion expressed by Wilbur Shigehara, meteorologist for the National Weather Service office in Santa Maria. He added that weather forecasting is frequently a game of guessing because weather phenomena can go undetected in areas where the nearest Weather Service office is many miles away. Weather Service offices, such as the office in Santa Maria, are responsible for relaying to the public information on local conditions. These conditions include frost warnings for agriculturalists, atmospheric conditions for aviators, and general temperature and precipitation predictions in the local area. According to Mr. Shigehara, Santa Maria is the only Weather Service office on the Central Coast. Predictions of frost for...
I think weather forecasting along the Central Coast is a bit more finickier than the interior where...
Mother Nature has a tendency to fool everyone, especially weather forecasters. Despite today's elaborate weather recording instruments and satellite pictures, Mother Nature can change her wind direction or storm tracks and surprise us with her little bag of tricks. This was the opinion expressed by Wilbur Shigehara, meteorologist for the National Weather Service office in Santa Maria. He added that weather forecasting is frequently a game of guessing because weather phenomena can go undetected in areas where the nearest Weather Service office is many miles away. Weather Service offices, such as the office in Santa Maria, are responsible for relaying to the public information on local conditions. These conditions include frost warnings for agriculturalists, atmospheric conditions for aviators, and general temperature and precipitation predictions in the local area. According to Mr. Shigehara, Santa Maria is the only weather service office on the Central Coast. Predictions of frost for concerned farmers and ranchers is particularly tricky, Mr. Shigehara said. He added that frost forecasts, which are usually issued from November to May, are not totally foolproof due to unexpected overnight changes in cloud cover or wind direction. I asked Mr. Shigehara if he felt the weather on the Central Coast tended to be more unreliable than in regions inland.
I think weather forecasting along the Central Coast is a bit more finickier than the interior, where the people, the forecasters in the interior do have up-to-the-minute reports of storms coming in. We along the coast do have areas in which we don't know what's happening. For example, between Salinas and Paso Robles, a storm could be there and we could be missing this storm. However, with satellite pictures and radar, most of these storms now go detected, so we know what's coming in. But with the event, with the coming of computers, high-speed computers, and very elaborate satellite pictures, we feel that weather forecasting is becoming less finickier, even though we do miss our forecasts. Possibly because even with satellite pictures, many times Mother Nature just doesn't reveal all of her secrets, and she does come in and sneak up on us.
Weather has always played an important role in our lives, and she doesn't always behave the way we'd like to. This is Bruce Clark reporting for 91 News.